Welcome back to AEIOU, a podcast about Austria. This is Andrew, your host. Now, you might have noticed in the last episode that we zipped past the year 1789, which was one of the most consequential years in world history because it was the year in which the French Revolution began. But this is not a podcast about France. It's a podcast about Austria. So naturally, we're going to look this week at events in Belgium. Remember that Belgium, or at the time of the French Revolution, the Austrian Netherlands, was part of the Habsburg monarchy, so events there cannot be truly separated from events in Austria until the two places are wholly separate countries, and even then, the associations will often remain. Traditional dating of the French Revolution states that it began on July 17, 1789, with the storming of the Bastille. However, for today, we are going to look at events that began about a month later in the city of Liège, which today is in Belgium. Like the rest of what were loosely called the Netherlands, unhappiness in Liège had a long history before 1789. This land and its French-speaking population were ruled by a prince-bishop, which means that the Catholic bishop of Liège was also the secular ruler of the territory. Since the Holy Roman Empire was still around at this time, the prince-bishop also was an imperial elector. In 1772, Francis Charles de Velbert became the prince-bishop of Liège. Like the rulers we discussed in the last 2 weeks, Mary Theresa and Joseph II, Velbert was an enlightened absolutist, overseeing broad reforms in education, the arts, and government. When Velbert died in 1784, he was succeeded as prince-bishop by Caesar Constantine Francis de Hohensbrück, who was not a reformer and therefore was deeply unpopular. Citizens of Liège sought constitutional reforms so the prince-bishop would have less power to rule arbitrarily. They also took issue with Hohensbrück's taxation policies, which heavily favored the wealthy and placed most of the tax burden on the middle class and poor. And if all these issues weren't bad enough, like in France, food was scarce. On August 18, 1789, tensions in Liège exploded. Inspired by events in France, rebels stormed the citadel of the principality, and the prince-bishop fled. A republic was declared in September. The emperor attempted to mediate the dispute between the now exiled prince-bishop and the rebels, but to no avail. For the coming year, Liège would be a de facto independent republic. Meanwhile, in nearby Brabant and Flanders, two Dutch-speaking provinces of what today is Belgium, tensions were similarly heating up. In 1780, not long before she died, Empress Maria Theresa had named her daughter Maria Christina and her son-in-law, Prince Albert Casimir of Saxony, as the joint governors of the Austrian Netherlands. Unlike in Liège, where the reforms of Maria Theresa and Joseph were popular, in Brabant, they were deeply unpopular. The people of the area were suspicious of Joseph's centralizing tendencies, particularly as they regarded the church. Whereas Joseph sought to subordinate the church to his own authority, the people of Brabant saw this move as an assault on their own deeply held Catholicism. More than 2 years before tensions exploded in France, early in 1787, rebels rose up in Brabant. In May, the joint governors suspended Joseph's reforms in response and sought a compromise with the aggrieved parties. Emperor Joseph was angry at his reforms being stalled, but he slowed down for the time being. Nevertheless, the rebels took advantage of the lull to organize more formally. By the time Joseph had caught his breath and moved in 1789 to institute more of his reforms, the rebels had assembled an army in exile, led by John Andrew van der Mersch, and on October 24th, van der Mersch's army invaded Brabant from the neighboring Dutch Republic. Their first battle with Austrian forces, at the Battle of Turnhout, resulted in a loss for Austria. Subsequently, Austrian forces were expelled from the remainder of the Austrian Netherlands, with the exception of Luxembourg. In January of 1790, a Republican United States of Belgium was declared with Prussian backing. The revolt in Liège was one thing, but the full secession of the Austrian Netherlands was too much for Vienna to tolerate. Joseph died in February 1790, but his successor, his brother Leopold, redeployed troops from a recently ended war with the Ottoman Empire to suppress the revolt in Belgium. By December, the Belgian forces had been defeated and the Austrian Netherlands reintegrated back into the Habsburg monarchy. From there, Leopold sent the army into Liège to reclaim that territory as well. The rebels there were also defeated and the exiled prince-bishop returned to his throne. However, that's not the end of the story. Events in France would soon expand beyond the borders of that country. The reaction in Austria to the French Revolution is an important topic, not only because of the state system brought into existence at the time of the Peace of Westphalia, which the French Revolution was now threatening, but also because the leaders of Austria during the Revolution were, in sequence, two of Marie Antoinette's brothers and then her nephew. when the revolution initially broke out and Joseph was still the ruler of Austria, the emperor concerned himself with establishing a safe escape route for his sister and brother-in-law, King Louis XVI of France, in case the need arose for them to flee. When Leopold succeeded his brother as Austrian ruler, he shared his late brother's concern for their sister's well-being. Worrying that war with France would break out eventually, Leopold shored up his alliances, smoothing over a difficult relationship with Prussia and making diplomatic overtures toward Great Britain. In June 1791, when King Louis and Queen Marie Antoinette attempted to flee Paris and were brought back to Paris as prisoners, Leopold appealed to the other sovereigns of Europe to join him in demanding the French king and queen's release. While his call was largely rebuffed, the following month Leopold and King Frederick William II of Prussia issued the Joint Declaration of Pillnitz. In the document, the emperor and king wrote that they, quote, regard the actual situation of His Majesty the King of France as a matter of communal interest for all sovereigns of Europe, end quote. They stated further that they hoped Louis would be able to re-establish, quote, the foundations of a monarchical government suiting to the rights of the sovereigns and favorable to the well-being of the French, end quote. Finally, Leopold and Frederick William said that, if the re-establishment of Louis's reign did not come to pass, that they would, quote, act promptly and unanimously with the forces necessary for realizing the proposed and communal goal. In expectation, they will give the suitable orders to their troops so that they will be ready to commence activity. End quote. In the immediate aftermath of the Declaration of Pillnitz, Louis swore allegiance to the French Constitution, and Leopold believed a peaceful solution might be in the offing. However, the saber rattling from France had only gotten worse, and by April 1792, Austria and Prussia would be at war with France. Leopold didn't survive to see war break out. After less than 2 years on the throne of Austria, he died and was succeeded by his son, who reigned as Francis II. Francis would be the last man to be both Archduke of Austria and Holy Roman Emperor. However, he would also be the first to be called the Emperor of Austria. But more on that later. The first war between revolutionary France and Austria went on for more than 5 years. During that period, King Louis and Marie Antoinette were executed. The Jacobins rose to power in France, the Reign of Terror was unleashed, and Napoleon Bonaparte rose to prominence. Before Napoleon was definitively defeated in 1815, there would be 7 highly costly wars. But I don't want to weigh down this podcast about Austria with too many details about the French Revolutionary and Napoleonic Wars. Our focus should be in Austria. So how did Austria fare in these wars? The short answer is not very well. In the Third War, fought from April 1805 to July 1806, France, led by Napoleon, fought the combined forces of Russia and Austria at Austerlitz on December 2, 1805. The French were victorious, and at the end of 1805, Francis signed the Treaty of Pressburg in what is now Bratislava, the capital of Slovakia. French claims to Austrian territory in present-day Italy were recognized. In addition, Austria ceded territory to Bavaria, which was one of the German states that had broken with the Holy Roman Empire to fight alongside Napoleon. These events, along with Napoleon's earlier annexation of imperial territory on the west bank of the Rhine River, resulted in the French Emperor's creation of the Confederation of the Rhine, cobbled together from Napoleon's client states of the Holy Roman Empire. The natural result of the creation of the Confederation, from Napoleon's viewpoint, was the permanent dissolution of the Holy Roman Empire. The traditional historiography of this event has tended to view the end of the empire as a foregone conclusion set in motion with the Peace of Westphalia 150 years earlier and expedited by the advent of Napoleon. According to this view, by the time the coup de grace was delivered by Francis II, the empire was well past its sell-by date. For many decades, Austria's position as the most powerful land within the Holy Roman Empire was being challenged by Prussia. This rivalry would continue well into the 19th century. For now, suffice it to say that, if Austria and Prussia began to emerge as two separate Germanies, then the Confederation of the Rhine played the role of a third Germany, although political maneuvering among these three German powers had to a large extent already begun by the Revolutionary and Napoleonic Wars. The processes that culminated in the Empire's dissolution were more complex than the traditional view of Napoleon carving off Rhineland provinces from the Empire to form a buffer against Prussia. Instead, innovations according to which a massive reorganization of the imperial states was undertaken and Catholic power within the empire diminished relative to Protestant power. The most important of these innovations was the principal conclusion of the imperial delegation, or
Reichsdeputationshauptschluss.
thank you, Florian. Although such a reconfiguration would seem to weaken Austria's position within the empire, it nevertheless allowed Francis II to consolidate authority over the remaining Catholic dominions. The final stage of the empire's disappearance involved the transition of Francis from Holy Roman Emperor to Emperor of Austria, a change that took place 2 years earlier, largely in preparation for the empire's imminent dissolution. The historian Peter Wilson masterfully details the delicate negotiations with France that allowed Napoleon to elevate himself to the title of emperor while preventing him from making a claim to the throne of Charlemagne, agreeing that neither the French nor Austrian emperor would lay claim to the title of Holy Roman Emperor. Quote, both new titles were more royal than imperial, there was still only one emperor in Europe. End quote. That this emperor and the emperor of Austria were the same person made little difference with the knowledge that the Holy Roman Empire would soon disappear. In a final piece of imperial chess, Francis II and his foreign minister Count Stadion agreed that Francis's abdication from the throne of Charlemagne should coincide with the dissolution of the empire to prevent Bavaria or Saxony from claiming the throne for themselves, a right reserved to them under the imperial constitution during any interregnum. Thus, even in finally relinquishing control of the Holy Roman Empire, the Habsburgs recognized not only the emergence of Napoleon in France as a continental power and a sort of parity with Prussia in the Confederation of the Rhine, but also the potential competition to be mounted by German states left independent by the empire's end. Thus did the Holy Roman Empire go into the dustbin of history, and the Empire of Austria emerge as a great power in the first decade of the 19th century. We'll pick up here in the next episode. Thanks for listening.